When it comes to singing, I'm a follower, not a leader. And having the men up front this year is perfect. You guys do know what you're doing, right? I mean, just... Arg. So I have a story for you that is all too familiar. This is one story out of dozens that happen every year. According to documents filed in district court in Pennsylvania, Michael Donnelly, who was the former president of Coastal Investment Advisors, lied to 13 of his clients, all of them over age 60, and stole almost $2 million from them. This happens all the time. He promised them that he would invest in some sound financial products on their behalf, and he provided updates to them, all false, assuring them the investments were doing well. Instead, he took their money, spent it on cars and private schools for his kids and golf memberships, necessities of life. Now, his scheme, like all financial schemes, ultimately fell apart, and the Securities and Exchange Commission caught up with them and filed charges. His victims had been his clients since 2003. So in 2008, it was not unusual that they would seek his advice about how to invest more of their money. And he advised them to give his company the funds to reinvest, saying that their investment would produce a yield of at least 5.5%, and that they could take their money out at any time. So clients began writing him checks. And in 2010, they'd given him $800,000, never to see that money again, even a couple in their 80s. Now, of course, he's not the only weasel who's conned people out of their life savings. Who can forget Bernie Madoff, right? He's the confessed operator of the largest Ponzi scheme in world history, not just U.S. history, world history. $64.8 billion from 4,800 clients. That's just mind-boggling. You know, Sharon and I get closer to retirement. These kind of stories hit close to home as we began to have to make, and I'm sure some of you were in the same boat or have been through it already, you have to make serious decisions about your long-term financial welfare. It's a scary world out there, and dishonest or just plain old inept people are a dime a dozen, and one wrong decision can wreck your financial future for the rest of your life. Now, in today's gospel reading, Jesus tells a story about a man with some money who's in the same boat as too many of us, making serious choices regarding our finances and long-term security and peace of mind. So he, like us, turns his money over, in his case, to three financial advisors. Now, in this story, there is servants. Just like when we hire a financial advisor, they work for us, right? There are servants, as it were. So the client, the master, gives three people an opportunity to make him some money, to get him the best possible yield. And of course, the client is going to be very happy with the one who gets him the most money. Wouldn't you be? So what happens? Well, in a nutshell, he has 8 talents to invest, say $800,000. He turns to his first advisor and gives him $500,000. The second advisor gets $200,000, and the third $100,000. That distribution according to their skills as financial advisors, in the opinion of the client. Well, like any good investor, the client diversifies his portfolio by taking his $800,000 and dispersing it among three different places. He's confident that when he returns from his long trip, one or all of his financial advisors will have produced a healthy return for him. And don't you all expect the same with your money when you invest it? You don't want to see this, you want to see lots of that. Well, it's a good strategy. When he left, he was worth $800,000. When he returns, he's worth $1.5 million. Pretty sweet. Now, the first investor doubled his client's investment. Second one does the same. The third banker, being no genius, was so risk-averse that he simply buried the money in the ground, kind of like putting it in a savings account. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, nothing lost. Well, the client was not happy with the third guy and fired him on the spot, calling him worthless, probably a few other names as well. The authorities are called in, and he was thrown into the outer darkness, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I still don't quite understand what gnashing of teeth is, but I don't believe it's a good thing. So what if you were Jesus' financial advisor? We are, you know. We're the stewards of what God has given us. We wandering Aramaeans, whose parents and grandparents went down to Egypt. We have a responsibility to use what God has given us in a way that increases the principal. We work for a hard master who expects a good return from the talents he gives us. He wants us to produce with what we've been given. Now, there's a story about a team of engineers who worked for Thomas Edison in his lab in Menlo Park. Well, for many months, they pursued a line of research that ultimately led them nowhere. What started out as such a promising opportunity turned out to be a blind alley, and in fear and trembling, they went to see the boss and tell him of their failure. Well, Edison surprised them by congratulating them. True, they had come up with nothing useful, but they had increased the scope of human knowledge, and they had eliminated certain probabilities and possibilities that would in the future allow others to direct their efforts more concisely. Most of all, they had fulfilled their assignment. They hadn't buried their talent in the ground. They had risked everything in a quest for a reward. They chose not to play it safe, but to risk it all, to put it all down and spin the wheel. See, the problem with playing safe is, good Lord, I'm preaching to myself here. The problem with playing safe is that all too often it means not playing at all, right? The call goes out in the church for people to pitch in and help in some way, whether financially or by exercising their other spiritual gifts. And too often the voice of caution wins out in our heads. Not me. I couldn't do that. Or the other popular version, not now. Now's not the right time. Maybe next year. Maybe 5 years from now. Always to those show-stopping objections are two simple statements. If not me, then who? And if not now, then when? The master of the text is taking a trip. It's urgent. And Jesus knows that he likewise is going on a trip, and that someday God the Father would send him back and there'd be a settling of accounts. That's why in the story, the first two advisors traded their talents immediately. They didn't want to be caught empty-handed when the master returned, which could be at any time. And their wisdom was rewarded. That's a reminder from Matthew in writing many years after Jesus was crucified, raised in glory, and ascended to his Father. Well, the Christian community that Matthew writes to was getting restless waiting for his return. And you keep thinking of Jesus' words, watch and be ready. You know, a few things leap out from the story. First, obviously, that God has given each of us something to invest. Even that third lazy and worthless servant was given one talent. And Jesus' disciples knew that. Jesus had given them something, some skill or talent or blessing to use for growing the kingdom, even if it's just making phone calls from your bed. You know, it's easy to brush off the idea that God has given us anything useful or needed to invest for the sake of the kingdom. That, shucks, persona. It might not look good to the rest of us, but God isn't buying it. God invests skills and talents in us so that we can use them for his glory. God is a strict taskmaster, and he's given each one of us something to use. Everything we have, given by God, we can use. We are, for lack of better terms, Jesus' investment bankers. We're given talents to play with. Notice that he doesn't give Jesus or the master, the three slaves, equal amounts. He gives each according to their ability or their skills. It's the same with us. We're not all given the same amounts. We're not all given the same blessings, right? Anyone want to be chair of the finance committee or feel capable? That's not something for everyone, or building in grounds, but we each have something. No matter how small or insignificant we think it might be. And that's what matters. Jesus makes it clear in his parable that the client, the master, when he returns, expects a healthy return. He expects that on his return, he will discover that his three investors, hopefully, have made him piles of cash. And of course, he intends to reward them appropriately. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that God isn't interested in how we spend the blessings that God has given us. It's disappointing when talent or blessings or brains or resources are squandered and underutilized. Any one of you teachers? Any of you have promising students that have ability and could be great and choose not to? How frustrating is that? God expects a return, a big return from what he's given us. You know, our purpose on earth isn't to take up space, although how often do we do that? Or to fill our barns with grain, as Jesus will talk about, or line our pockets with cash for our own personal glory and comfort. Scripture says that we should take time to worship with others, to love our neighbors, to focus on our spiritual gifts, to be kind and helpful, and demonstrate hospitality. You know, I think about those first two advisors. They get a 100% return. They double the master's money. Third one, he didn't lose anything, but he didn't gain anything either, and he was fired immediately. The first two went off immediately and traded. The third dug a hole. That third fellow, he was afraid of the master. If you hear his words, "Oh, master, I knew you were a strict and harsh taskmaster who would be angry if I did something wrong." The other two, they didn't feel the same way about their master. They were pleased to be able to serve him. Maybe they even loved him. And love motivates more than fear. In any case, we've been given one thing to do: increase what God has given us. And we can hone our skills and put our resources to use and see every day as an opportunity to serve God. Or we can live for ourselves. We can put all the blessings that God has given us on a shelf and say, you know what, they're not useful or relevant. We can refuse to risk kindness, loving others, and let it be all about ourselves. Aquara, do you all love being here every Wednesday and every single Wednesday of the year say, "Whoopee, I get to go practice with choir one more night"? Or are there nights like, you know, it's cold, I don't feel good, I'm tired, Bachelor in Paradise is on, I don't know what's on Wednesday night, I just want to stay home? There are times we don't feel like using our gifts and our talents, and it's so easy to do that. You know what? If I volunteer to teach Sunday school in our best whining voice, every Sunday I got to be there at 9 and I have to, I'm just not going to do it. But if not you, who? And if not now, how? And that's the God's honest truth. If not you, who? Who will be in the choir? If not now, when? Tomorrow? Next month? Good Lord, I don't even know what I'm having for dinner tonight. Tomorrow's a world away. I don't know what tomorrow brings. If not now, when? And if not you, then who's going to do it? Amen.